Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, and today's episode is based on minutes 81 through 85 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. In this set of minutes, Rey leaves the island, Yoda shows up and burns some page-turners, and DJ says he can do whatever Finn and Rose want after they have a pre-do-it conversation about price. My guest today is the world-famous Alex Robinson from Star Wars Minute Podcast and alexrobinson.fun. You don't even have to plug it. I just know your website.
This is so much easier than my own show. I can let you do all the work.
I know. So. Saying your website is like the hardest part of doing the show, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's a delight to be here.
There's a lot of like ring theoriness in this episode. Not only because I'm having you on my show, which is like a reversal of how we met, but there's some things come up that oddly have come up in minutes that I've been on your show on Star Wars Minute.
Nice.
That weirdly are coming up again here. So, yeah,
like poetry.
It rhymes. Yes. How are you feeling about this?
About which part, the minutes or the show, being on the show?
Both.
These are some of the great minutes in this week, and I'm a little anxious about being on the show because I know it's a music focused, and I'm totally like a caveman when it comes to being able to record. I still can't tell you Ray's theme. If I hear it, if someone plays it, then I go, oh yeah, I know that song, but I couldn't pull it out of my head. So
fair enough.
Might be a short one.
What's your own experience listening to this, like Star Wars music? Like, what do you tend to notice early on, and what do you tend to not notice until you've heard it or watched it 100 times?
Well, I guess I'm most familiar with New Hope music because I used to listen to the story of Star Wars on a cassette, which had basically a narrated version of Star Wars with music and dialogue and sound effects from the movie. So I definitely, probably that's where I've heard them the most times. So so I can like listen to the soundtrack to A New Hope, and I could, the whole thing is going in my head. Like I can do the lines, you know, when certain musical cues come up and stuff like that. So the rest of them less so.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I didn't know that these cassettes were a thing in that way. Someone else, another guest brought up the cassettes, but it now occurs to me that this is probably what he was talking about. Maybe. Interesting. Okay. What, you have a music podcast of your own. So I feel like you definitely have an entry point into talking about music. It just might not be the same one as me.
Yeah. For your sake, I hope that's true. I mean, you're like a musician and everything. I'm just some guy. So yeah, I imagine we probably have different approaches.
Yeah, that's, I need people like you, though, to help me, like, get the thing, like, to help me realize what's relevant about the things I'm noticing, if that makes sense. So,
sure, yeah. So, part of a Symbian circle.
Yes, exactly. Let's get into what happens here. Before I like go into a spiel about things I noticed, you go first.
Well, this is the week where Yoda shows up.
Yes.
I remember that being very pleasantly surprised by that in the movie. Like, I don't know why it hadn't occurred. For some reason, that was something that hadn't occurred to me. That Yoda. Everything else, I'm kind of like, oh, I wonder if that will happen. I wonder if this will happen. But Yoda showing up was a very pleasant surprise, especially it being puppet Yoda and all. That's probably the highlight. And I guess Rey takes off for, she gives up on trying to convince Luke. So
there's like a lot of, like, I didn't expect to see Yoda either in this film. And I think the thing with Yoda is like, it's not just, he's always accompanied by his theme that comes in. And it's a very distinct theme, and it's used comparatively, you know, pretty sparingly compared to like the Force theme, which is like every blink is like the Force theme. Yeah. Yoda theme is like very specifically tied to him. So it's a real treat to hear it. And I think some interesting things are happening in the music here. Sacred Jedi Texts is the name of the track that this is technically on the soundtrack, but it's a little bit split up in the film. Like it's not, it doesn't play out exactly the same way. There's some cuts and there's some inserts with some extra Yoda stuff, but, yeah. Do you like the music in these Bennett's? Like, did it affect you anyway? Did it, is it something you don't really notice until you're forced to be on a podcast about it? Like, tell me what your experience is.
I think it's more that one. Because I was wondering, like, do they, I wonder if they played Yoda's theme during that minute.
Oh,
I feel
gosh.
Like, so I don't even, I really do not even notice it. So, yeah.
This is fascinating. Okay. This is, this is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So this, since this show comes out, you know, a day after Star Wars Minute finishes up their week, did you talk about the music at all last week or in this past week?
You know, I don't think we did. And to make it even funnier, we had Tony Thaxton was our guest, musician Tony Thaxton, and music still never really came up. So
Tony.
It was right there. It was right there in front of us. But
that is really funny. Okay. Yeah. Tony was on episode 7 of the show. Yeah. And he had some really interesting thoughts and some really interesting what he thought was admissions, sort of like yours, in which he said that he couldn't really tell what the Leia themes were. And,
right.
And I thought that was
Leia theme too, and that's like a big one.
Yeah. But like, of course, once I start playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you that's funny. Well, you know, from what I understand, drummers do get teased a lot by other musicians, a lot of drummer jokes and so on. So not saying they're true or not, but I've just, you know, cut the guy some slack.
I did. I mean, okay, I don't think I truly don't think it's a big deal to not know the names of things because a lot of these are actually not like, they're not like necessarily all names that John Williams came up with. I mean, Yoda's theme is because, you know, there is a track named, you know, called Yoda's, but like the Force theme, for example, we first heard that in like what, Binary Sunset or like something like that. I don't even know the official track titles, but some people call it Obi-Wan's theme. Some people call it, some people call it the Force theme. Like there's
Obi-Wan's
just like,
theme.
Yeah. Right. The thing is like a lot of these themes, like the tension thing and the like whatever, a lot of these things are just what theorists and what commentators have just all have just decided to use just to give it a name to refer to it.
Right.
So a lot of it is super arbitrary. So it's really not, it's not a huge deal. I will say, okay, about 46 seconds into the clip when, like Luke is walking out, we start to hear the Force theme. And let me just recap. And then the next chord that occurs, normally in the Force theme, the chord that you would expect is this one. So not necessarily that exact chord, but you know, that type of that chord, depending on what key you're in. So that would be like what it is. It's a sub dominant. It's a major sub dominant chord. It's a major four chord. Okay. It's not hugely important, but what that serves, like the role that chord serves is very, tends to be pretty specific in functional harmony. But instead of that chord, we get a friend that I talked about in Rogue One minute. What was it? What minutes did I do? Rogue One minute something. 101. we actually get a Neapolitan chord. So instead of we get well, that took me a little while to actualize, but yeah, it's our friend the Neapolitan chord. Were you gonna say something?
No, I was just gonna say I always enjoy it when you play when I see anyone play musical instruments like that. I'm always I remember when the last time we recorded with you in person, you were playing your violin, and it was just so impressive to see someone playing, taking a wooden box with strings attached to it and making that noise come out of it.
You know, that's like actually, that's sort of like the reason I decided to play violin as a kid.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I thought it looked like magic when I saw it on TV.
Yeah, that's kind of what it
is. Yeah. I wasn't like, oh, I want to play a specific song. I was just like, yeah, whatever that, I just want to make that sound and do whatever and do anything. Yeah. I just want to be able to have it sound like that.
Right. Yeah. So you did it. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yay.
Hey, throw the violin away and start working on a different
new box. A new box. Yeah. A bigger box.
It's always a bigger box.
Always. So Neapolitan chords are interesting, and they're a pet favorite of mine. And I know I kind of like went, whenever I start talking about Neapolitan chords, I bring up the Decemberists song, which, if you don't know the Decemberists, the song I'm thinking about is called The Infanta. And it goes, it's like, here she comes in her palanquin on the back of an elephant. And then the next chord is on a bed. So what that is like, the reason that's an interesting chord is because normally in like what's called functional harmony, or like, you know, in what we know from most scores and just like music, is normally when you are using a scale, it's like that's a set palette. It's like using a set palette of colors. It's like you've already chosen your colors. So all the chords and notes that you're going to play are, you know, at a baseline going to be one of those colors. And so throwing in a chord like that is sort of like swapping out a couple colors that aren't normally part of the palette of the key you're in. Does that make sense?
Totally. Now that you're putting in visual terms, now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So like, in the case of the force theme, which here it's going from D minor, which normally goes from D minor to G major. Instead, it's going from D minor to E flat major, which is like not really, like E flat is not normally in the key of D minor. And it has like a surprising quality to it. And I think it really fits like where it lands in the scene. In Rogue One, the spot that it came up in was like when, I believe it was when like K2SO was saying a surprising line or something. The point is like, mm-hmm, it usually has like a surprising element to it. It's also in Indiana Jones. Where is it? Indiana Jones. It's like, right there, there's another Neapolitan.
Right.
So it's something John Williams does. Not a lot, but a lot in specific times, if that makes sense.
So is the purpose to sort of convey that something, that this is not going away the way you think, or is it to kind of perk you up, or why does he choose those moments to put that note in?
Yeah, I think what you just said could very well be it. It could be to to throw one off. There's a different type of cadence in music called a deceptive cadence, and it kind of reminds me of that. Like sometimes you do basically a fake out chord, like a chord that someone else, like the audience expects one chord, but you give them another, and it kind of adds an air of mystery and adventure, or like something is like we see Yoda, it's not going to go the way that you think.
Right.
But also analyzing music is a little bit tricky because it's not always indicative of a heavy-handed intent, you know? So in analyzing music, I can't like put, you know, I don't know if John Williams is like, I'm going to do this to affect this. It could just be so natural to him to put that there and, you know, to feel through scenes in that way that he doesn't even maybe consciously like know what he's doing, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not a logical thing. It's a gut thing that he's just kind of totally. Like, that's what it feels like it should be. So that makes sense.
Totally. Because I think it would feel weird to just like place the exact same theme in the way that we hear it. Good old reliable Yoda, like let's good old reliable Force theme. Like let's just do it exactly the normal way. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem like it would fit with all the other ways that this scene and this film are not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So did you, I thought it was interesting that in the story, Yoda, waits until Rey is gone before he appears, as opposed to showing up when Rey is there and maybe making a case one way or the other for Luke to train her or Luke to go back or Rey to, you know, to leave without him or anything. So, that was something I was thinking about. Luke is the only one we ever see who's in the original trilogy who sees Yoda. Like he's almost like Mr. Snuffleupagus or the Great Gazoo or one of these characters that only he can see. Because if no one else, you know, he's like, no, Yoda was just here a second ago. And they're like, sure, a little green guy can, you know, make stuff happen. So anyway, I didn't know if that was any
true.
Significance to the fact that he does not appear in front of Rey or any of the other characters.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I feel like Yoda probably drops in deliberately. Uh-huh. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
But I don't think, like, can other characters see him if he were there? Probably not. But Rey probably could if she were there.
A lot of about Force Ghosts we still don't know at this point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we were saying if Chewbacca had been looking in when Yoda and Luke were talking, would Chewbacca have seen Ghost Yoda, or would he just see Luke sitting there by himself, and it's kind of like more in Luke's brain that it is a something that is an objective reality that anyone can see? Anyway,
that's interesting.
We'll never know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do like entertain that concept more in this movie just because of all the visions and all the like, what are they actually seeing?
Right,
moments,
yeah.
But
yeah, when they're doing their little force communication, that
yeah.
between Rey and the whole Reylo stuff.
Yeah.
So Yoda gives his little speech about failure. Does the music? Is there any special of the music about that? Because this is kind of something the Jedi have never really tackled before about dealing with how failure can be a teacher and so on. Is there anything special about that music, or you have any comments about it?
Yeah, well, it continues along in this track, and the music gets a little bit like, it gets the opposite of serene for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like we get some like brass accented stuff, and I wish I remembered exactly where the lines lined up with where the music is, but the music is like overall changing. It's changing character quite a bit in this scene. Like it goes from mm-hmm. one theme to like another little interlude. And then it's like, it almost takes, this might sound bad, but it's sort of like we're going on someone's really rapid, like, internal journey of like changing their mind and like doing, I don't know, like Yoda's maniacally laughing, it seems, at some point. And like Luke is, I don't know if it's Mark Hamill's acting or with him trying to protect the Jedi text. Like it's all very, not pantomime. I'm trying to think of like the type of theater where it's like very exaggerated and like, oh no, but what about this? And like, do you know what I'm kind of getting at? Like, this is not a subtle
it's
scene.
It's like a little, like a shorthand, like rather than a whole, he goes through a dramatic change very quickly.
So it's
almost more exaggerated than it would have, than it would be if it was, you know, in a more natural, I know what you mean. But I guess that's kind of Star Wars too. I mean, Luke loses his aunt and uncle, and the next scene he's like, there's nothing for me here now, I'm going. Like, he really got over them, essentially his parents dying pretty quickly in that moment. But it's a similar thing. The story is about him moving on, so they can kind of just skip over him mourning and all that stuff. It doesn't have anything to do with the bigger picture. So
that's true, in that case, we skip over him mourning. In this case, we like watch him go through
through the seven stages of denial in like four seconds.
Yes, you know? Exactly. That's what it is.
Well, I guess you're right. So you're saying the music reflects that, it kind of
a little bit. Like I would say it goes from like shifting. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think like Yoda's theme is really, it's really specific. And I think like the function that it serves here is like the same function that Yoda's appearance serves, which is convenient because it's his theme. The interesting thing about Yoda's theme is it uses a mode called the Lydian mode. And the Lydian mode is just another palette, basically. It's another seven-tone musical scale, set palette of colors. And these are what the colors are. The effect that the Lydian mode, let me phrase it another way. Melodies that tend to use the Lydian mode, especially in Star Wars, tend to evoke something hopeful, forward-thinking, magical, childlike, optimistic, things like that. So for those listening who, you know how to play any sort of like basic chords, think of going from C major to D major. That's a kind of unusual, it's kind of an unusual chord progression. The other times we hear it in Star Wars are in young Anakin's theme. If only I could remember that. I'll skip that one for now. Wow, I was just thinking about it yesterday. Rose's theme, we actually hear it in Rose's theme. That's Yoda. Wow. Do you remember young Anakin's theme, Alex? What? This is going to bother me so much. What is young Anakin's theme? I've like played it so many times. Alex, you don't remember it, do you?
No, but it did remind me of a question.
Wait, I can't hear you very loudly.
Is it working now? There we go. Can you hear it? Okay. Is young Anakin's theme related to does Darth Vader, is the Imperial March Darth Vader's theme, is it the same thing? Or does Darth Vader have his own theme?
That's such a good question, actually. Well, okay, this is a good question. It doesn't sound the same, like the theme doesn't the theme doesn't technically sound the same, but it actually is related to it. Mostly at the end of the phrase, though.
So, so the Imperial March is Darth Vader's theme.
Yes, but I'm thinking of young Anakin's theme from...
Anakin's theme is somehow connected
it
to
is the end
Imperial
of it.
Imperial March. Okay.
Yes. Now that I'm remembering it, now that I remember that it's on the flute, I believe.
Do you remember when it's played? What you're singing?
Oh, it's in the Phantom Menace, you mean?
Yeah, I assume it's when he's in like this, maybe going to like his house.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I heard it there. Where it really is, like the biggest thematic moment that it gets is honestly in the the orchestral suite or in the stuff that's outside of the film. That's where we hear the most transformed versions of it that really seal the deal on it. Really goes dark in that version, which is a little sad it didn't make it into The Phantom Menace, because it really spells out the Darth Vader connection in that in that fuller version. But John Williams has gone on the record in that case saying that that one was intentional.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there a middle Anakin? Is there like a Attack of the Clones era? Like, does Anakin have a theme for every stage of his life?
That's a good question. I don't think he does, though. Mm-hmm. Someone else may perceive one. There's Anakin's betrayal, and there's stuff about him like turning, but that could arguably be like a motif for turning dark stuff, like his betrayal and like the Order 66 stuff, like that has a lot of Dies Irae in it, a lot of that stuff.
About that.
Yeah.
that's interesting to me, because I guess I would have thought that John Williams having this opportunity would say, well, I already have a Darth Vader theme, but now I get to do sort of iterations of that at him at different stages, but it doesn't seem like, or I guess it's really up to what George Lucas wants. But
Anakin's theme was that. I'm calling it young Anakin's theme, but it's called Anakin's theme.
But it's not played. Is it played in Attack of the Clones as well?
Oh, that's a good question.
If he shows up in episode,
probably
10,
not as much. No.
Yeah. What music will we hear when he shows up in episode 10? The Force Ghost Anakin.
I would hope young Anakin's theme.
Young Anakin's.
Because he's back to the light.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say Kylo Ren also has, his theme gets transformed in The Rise of Skywalker too, to like a light version.
Yeah, I would have, I know, spoiler alert, but it also would have been interesting if Kylo Ren's theme and Kylo Ren's theme and Rey's theme like kind of merge together now that they're part of the dyad and all. Can they work that way?
We'll get there. Okay. there's a lot happening with their themes and with Palpatine, with the Emperor's theme. Right. Lots of that stuff.
Sounds like The Rise of Skywalker is gonna be a hard film for everyone to do podcasts.
I am with Riley Silverman and Pete in liking both The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. Okay. Yeah, you went quiet again, by the way. There you go. My microphone does that too. If I just hit the cord the wrong way, it's like suddenly you can't hear me. It's the worst.
That'll probably help.
Yeah. Yoda's theme ends with a Neapolitan moment too. And so that could have also been a reason that in the Force theme, John Williams threw in the Neapolitan chord. It's impossible. You know, I can't say for sure, but, Yoda's theme in the strings at the end of it, it goes like, yeah, you're nodding. Like, I think you recognize that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is another Neapolitan moment for John Williams, and it's in Yoda's theme. Appropriately
is,
so.
when you were playing that, I think I might have been thinking also of the soup part of the Superman.
Yeah, soundtrack. There's that. It's in the Superman too. Yeah.
Because when it goes da 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 da, and then it goes da 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 da, it kind of resumes the anyway.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, yeah. You're into some of these things. Like I think a lot of people can hear them, but just not know what it is. Yeah. The emails that I get from listeners asking questions often are of that nature. Well, people will be like, "I feel like something reminds me of something else." Right. And I don't know why. Yeah. And when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, yeah, there definitely is a connection. That's cool that you heard that.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that it's the same guy. So it would be almost like his artistic style is like, oh, yeah, that's a signature. If you were doing a parody of John Williams, you could include that to give it that John Williams-y sound.
Yes. So many film scores are that.
Say, this is a sidetrack, but have you seen any of these Marvel movies? Do you like their scores?
I'm not a Marvel person.
So you haven't seen any of them? Just a lot of people seem to criticize the music as being very samey and very.
Yeah. I've only seen Avengers. And maybe I think I may have seen Doctor Strange.
Okay.
I feel like haven't seen. I know that you don't have to like see them in order and anything like that.
A lot of pressure.
But it just feels like I don't get it, because every time I watch one, I'm just like, I don't get them. I just don't get it. I don't.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So like I'm not invested in it, so I don't notice when there's Easter eggs and.
Right.
Yeah. But there are a lot of film scores that. There are a lot of trends in film scoring that I am less fond of than others, I'll say. But I've never done an analysis of a Marvel movie soundtrack. So, yeah.
Okay.
I conveniently don't have any specifics to recall.
Good. You can ask and answer.
The thing is, it doesn't matter like what I think, really. What do you think?
No, I think to me it might speak to a weakness in that there's been 12 of these big hit movies, and like I don't know anyone who knows like the Iron Man theme or the Captain America theme. Like there's nothing distinctive about any of them, but again, it's not really my area, so
do you think that means you shouldn't have like that your opinion doesn't count as much?
Just my opinion about the aspects of the sound, the technical aspects of the soundtrack that you were talking about. Like I don't know a Neapolitan from a Sicilian, so but just in terms of that, like whether you could, for all I know, they could all been done by different people, or they all could be done by the same person.
Yeah.
That's true for a lot of movies for me, so I rarely notice the music, but yeah.
So
anyway,
I think it is relevant because John Williams' scores, at least in this era of time that we're in, are actually very rare. Mm-hmm. The critiques that I've heard of Marvel scores are that it doesn't really use themes a lot. Like they're definitely not constructed the same way that Star Wars scores are, or at least Star Wars film scores. And, the critique that I've also heard is that they're forgettable. I mean, I can give many reasons why that might be though, without even hearing them. And a lot of them have to do with just like the same way that a lot of films outside of the music could maybe be described as maybe more forgettable or more like factory made or rushed or just sort of like it.
Samey.
Yeah. Samey. And I think there are overall trends in filmmaking. And I was not a film studies major. I don't really know technical film stuff. So, I don't know for sure, but things are being made faster, cheaper, and louder and more intense, basically, these days. And that's not just like a, getting old observation. That is like literally technology is enabling so much that
right.
every aspect of filmmaking has to keep up with the speed of the other thing. And music is following that. So films are being made so much faster. Films have to, composers used to have a lot more time to do that.
Yeah.
And a lot more budget just because there wasn't the option of just like a composer doing a mock-up on the computer and having most, you know, the computer work be most of the score.
Yeah.
Like now, because everything is so fast and because films can be micro-edited in places, the music has to be almost have spots where it's more generic and can be chopped up more because films can be chopped up so easily. So scores, you know, it's not like in any individual composer's fault. It's like the trend, like just the industry and the process almost demands some of these things that wouldn't have been demanded of several decades ago when there wasn't the option of making so many cuts, you know? Things are made so differently now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. Something I think most people wouldn't think about. I certainly wouldn't have thought about it. Micro editing. That's it in a nutshell.
That's changed. It's changed so many things. If you listen to like an old John Williams soundtrack, you'll hear like, I think, you know, what you were saying about how you remember A New Hope.
Yeah.
And just by listening to it, I mean, some of that is obviously the repetition of you just listening to it so much and at such a young age. But I think some of it might speak to the through composed nature of it. Whereas John Williams, you know, still does this more so than some other composers in some other franchises. But now you get a lot of stuff that where it's like, basically,
I love that song.
Right. There's just a lot of convenient places where you could cut that. You know, if it repeats something for like 3 minutes, like that is not uncommon in scores today. You know, it's called an ostinato actually, where you just keep repeating like the same thing. Oh yeah, you could cut so easily in that. Director and editor would love that. So there's my little, I try not to let that tangent slip out too much, but it comes out sometimes.
Yeah. Can I ask you another soundtrack question?
Yeah.
I remember that, recently it surfaced some, music that John Williams had written for, A New Hope, but was not used, like specifically with part of it when they were in the trash compactor and so they played the clip with the music over it. Yeah, I think it's like when Luke disappears into the water and they're like, Luke, and it's just all totally quiet. But there was originally music composed for that whole scene. And it just made me aware of how many scenes in Star Wars don't have music in them. You know, like, I feel like there's a lot of scenes where people are just talking and there's not music behind them. Whereas I feel like now there'd be more of an inclination to fill stuff with music. But... is that my imagination? Are there a lot of silent, no music in The Last Jedi? Like, are there a lot of silent portions?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of silence in The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Probably more so than a lot of other films in Star Wars. I think The Last Jedi might have more silence, but I would have to, you know, count that to be sure. But, because I think the sound design really shines in a lot of scenes, you know, even in Rey's cave scene and, you know, things like the fire and the reverb and all the echoes and bounces and all those things. There's a lot of space in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I hadn't heard the trash compactor thing.
Check it out.
Yeah, I'm really curious. I probably... Yeah, I probably saw that. I probably saw that making the rounds and thought it was like a fan edit or something, or yeah. or like a fan composed thing, or like a, I don't know.
It's very weird to listen to because it's clearly the same type of music. It definitely sounds of it, but just to hear new, it's like yes, any new stuff, anything new from Star Wars, you know, any deleted scene from Star Wars, you're like, oh, it's so weird seeing this after seeing the, not having this for so long, to see now some of these characters in a different situation, hearing music over, hearing John Williams music over such a familiar thing is very, it's weird. So anyway, yeah, I encourage you to check it out.
I think the interplay between director and composer is so important mm-hmm. because, I mean, just John Williams may have composed that not knowing exactly, or with the director even, not knowing exactly what emotion or like what overall feeling they were going to try to get from that. Because mm-hmm. I think music, putting music in a scene is such an intentional choice, and taking it out changes our perception of how fast time is moving, I think. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if I can imagine music being in the trash compactor scene, the only way I could sort of imagine it is if it were really low underscore where you couldn't really hear it too much. And it was just maybe like low droney stuff.
Uh-huh. So basically no music.
Yeah. Or just the sort of low droney quiet type of stuff that was in the scene when Rose and Finn are in the jail, are in, uh-huh. And it, the music's not too active there until it breaks out into the Father Years track.
Right.
Yeah, because hearing, like, if the music were any were loud in the in the trash compactor scene, I think it would make the scene go by much faster for me, in a way that didn't necessarily make me feel like, oh my god, I'm like crap, I'm there in the trash compactor with them. I think taking, I think for me, taking when music is taken out of a scene or not put in a scene, it makes me feel really in there with the character.
Like it makes you feel
intimate. Like in Luke's hut when there's no music, or like in the cave with Rey when there's, you know, not much music at the beginning.
Yeah, because I guess the music is a kind of artificial, you know.
The music like, is like having a third music, wheel in the room. Yeah.
Yeah, so you hearing it, you're hearing, experiencing something Rey isn't, whereas if it's just silent, you're closer to what she is experiencing.
And music is manipulative.
Yeah.
It's a narrative device just like anything else. And not having it is sometimes more, it lends itself more to the documentary feel. It makes it feel more like what you're getting is a version of reality. When music's in there, I think it's sort of like, it reminds me that it's that I'm in a story and that it's someone's point of view, which
but
is great.
I think
great,
it can also, like, one thing I think music is good at in movies is, it is manipulative exactly in the way you say. So I think what it's good at is using music to evoke an emotion in the listener that the character might feel, but that is too difficult to convey just via the facial and stuff of the actor. Like the music is kind of letting you know what the person is feeling inside also, which is something that if you're just looking at it without any kind of music, you wouldn't have that sort of insight, but yeah, it is definitely manipulative, but like, all
oh no, exactly. That's
yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, manipulative in the neutral sense where it can,
yeah,
it's
a tool
useful.
That,
yeah.
That the movie maker has at their disposal.
Yeah. And it, especially like it can really help if there's a scene where there's not much going on, sort of like you said, and, or even if the actor didn't give a great performance, or even if like this script wasn't the best, or like, you know, I sometimes watch movies and I sense parts where there's like where I know that the score is doing most of the legwork in a certain scene in making that come across in a way that's understandable to me. And a lot of people have said that about John Williams's score for the prequels actually is how like his score, like John Williams scored the prequels like it was Oscar-worthy material. Like he took it seriously. He treated it like
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who didn't necessarily like the prequels, it like at least made them palatable to them. It was the score.
It definitely helped sell it as a star, give it a Star Wars feel, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely did some of the, it's interesting if he had gone with a totally different, you know, style, like all, you know, just all acoustic guitar for
the, oh my God. For the
prequels, like a totally, or like, you know, all synth, kind of, just to give it a different, you know, gosh. Texture than the original.
Young film. Anakin gets a little 80s synth.
All guitar orchestra.
That's really funny.
Yeah, you like each one would have its own, each trilogy would have its own sort of musical theme to it.
So. Yeah, so the music just really, it serves a really important, really yeah. important role, obviously. And in this scene, like having just like Yoda comes up and having all this Lydian and Neapolitan stuff and just stuff that mm-hmm. generally like sounds magical. I think it makes the scene kind of special and like insular in this movie. Like it's this special moment that doesn't pop up, you know, all the time in this movie. It's really confined to this one spot.
I have another question. If mm-hmm. you have time, do you have time for one more question?
Yes.
I think it was last week we saw the final version of Luke and Kylo Ren on that fateful night. You know, first time we saw it sort of from Luke's point of view, then we saw it from Kylo's point of view, and then this is kind of like the blending of the two. Do you remember, was there any particular musical connection between those three different versions of that same story? You know, was the music the same music just played in a different, you know, in different, subtly different ways? Or I know it's, yeah, you weren't prepped for this or anything, but you seem to have an ear for this sort of thing.
I have a hunch, but I would have to do, there must be a supercut of this somewhere on YouTube, or I could just do it myself. I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I'll have to answer that at another time. I just want to be sure before just saying what I think. But my guess would be that there is some difference between them, but my guess is that they're all a little bit dramatic and quick moving, sort of like how this scene went like in and out, like the flashbacks. Cause I'm trying to think, like, I think of Luke's face in those scenes, and it's so like, it's just so dramatic. the third one is especially hilarious to me. That's a good question, though. That's like the type of question that like helps me learn more about it. It kind of gives me more clues about what the scenes are doing, and also like how the composer is conceiving of them differently.
Yeah.
So like last week on my show, I was comparing Rey's cave music to Luke's cave music on Dagobah to investigate those similarities. And this would be a good one for me. Maybe I'll do it at the end of the season. Answer all the questions that came up. Thanks.
Sure. Always glad to help provide content.
Do you watch the animated shows?
I watched a bunch of Rebels, and I watched a bunch of Clone Wars. I watched the first episode of Bad Batch. I never consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But
how do you feel about the like art in those?
I'm not sure. I kind of wish they would try a different. I know that I know each one is kind of subtly different in its own way, and I guess Resistance they tried to really, but even that seemed like just those same designs just drawn instead of I don't know. It's still a little uncanny valley to me. A little, you know, like creepy sometimes. But what do you think? I know you watch them regularly. Am I correct?
Well, yes, I do watch them just to have a complete sense of what's happening.
Just to keep up with what's going, just to keep up with the galaxy news.
Just to keep, it's my HoloNet. But I often have questions about what is happening. And one big gap in my knowledge is like one of your strong points, which is the comics. And I mean, have you read all of the Star Wars comics?
No, I have not. I find the quality can be a bit erratic. The good thing is that in addition to the main Star Wars comic, they do a lot of they'll do like a 6-issue series about Lando, or they'll do a 6-issue series about Princess Leia. So you can kind of pick whichever side things sound interesting to you. I mean, if you want to, you can read everything, but you know, you can also go by what you want. There's been 3 Darth Vader series, and those have all been consistently excellent. So
those are the ones that I'm really excited to get into to read. I've only read a few.
One of the things I really love is it explores the relationship between Anakin and Palpatine, and that whole, you know, like basically there's one series that takes place right after the end of Revenge of the Sith, one that takes place right after the end of A New Hope, and one that takes place right after the end of Empire. So you're seeing Darth Vader at different stages in his life, and you know, it's and also it's like narrated by him, so you're hearing it like in his voice. So it's
That's cool. That's almost like a similar timeline to like the Thrawn novels.
Yeah, I don't remember. Thrawn might even show up. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, I hope so. He's like one of my favorite characters. what do you think is lost in translating like the live action Star Wars film characters to a cartoon in general?
I feel like the I wouldn't say a weakness of the cartoons, because that makes it sound negative, but one aspect of the cartoons is that they do seem to generally be aimed at a family audience. There's consistently like a young character in it who's part of like a family group and that, and there's nothing wrong with that. I know plenty of my friends love watching it with their kids, and I don't want to take away, you know, family Star Wars, but like The Mandalorian, although that even had a tiny little baby in it, so you could say that was even more of but it never felt like it was like a kid's show, whereas I feel like a lot of the cartoons feel like they're sort of like they have to pull their punches a bit in terms of how dark they can get or whatever, because they're kind of have to be something that's going to appeal to the whole family. And also I guess part of it is that, is what I feel like is my first feeling, that, they take the live action shows so far seem like they can be a bit grittier and darker than, the Clone Wars, etc. So
yeah, I feel you. The music is also significantly different in the shows, and I'm still trying to piece together like a more thorough comparison,
because that would be really interesting.
Yeah, they're just so different. It's interesting to see how the different shows come out and what ends up being more of a consistent style, and I'm just always like, I'm curious what, like, you're an artist, obviously. And something that I also asked Tony when he came on was like, I asked him how he like picks what songs, you know, with Star Wars at least, what strikes his fancy, like when he's listening, and like, you know, since he does covers and stuff like that, like what does he listen for? What type, how does he go about doing that? And so, like, when you are drawing characters or you know, what types of things are you drawn to? And how do you go about putting your spin
deciding
on them?
Huh. You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I guess I could say, you know, like, I like drawing, like, you know, aliens and monsters and that type of thing. But I can tell you why that I like drawing that.
More than humans?
I guess in addition to humans, I guess more than, I'd rather draw two monsters fighting each other than, like, I feel like I could be satisfied drawing that for a long time. Mm-hmm. An enormous scene of just monsters fighting each other. I can't tell you what it is about that. I mean, in terms of style, I like drawing things that have a lot of little details, and I like doing art that you can stare at for a while and see a lot of things in it the longer you look at it. And so that's what I'm currently into.
This doesn't surprise me. I find it, like, talking to other artists feels like it's so hard to describe. It can be really hard to describe one's personal style and process, even uh-huh. though, like, people like me, like, we see your finished works, mm-hmm. and people who listen to my music, you know, see my finished works. But to know, like, whatever the hell happens, like, in between, like, before getting there, like, what the whole process of that, like, sometimes I don't even know. It's like this whole thing where I'm like, can it happen again? I don't know. It just kind of happens.
And yeah, it's also the different ways people work, and, you know, they'll come up with the same end result, but the ways they get to that end result, you know, can be two entirely different mental gymnastics that require you to, you know, I remember some cartoonist would say, he would always start doing a story in the middle of the story and then kind of expand forward and backward at the same time from that place. And I was like, that's so, like, it would never occur to me to try to work on something like that, but, like, in that style, but that was just the way he was just wired, that was the way he did it. And, you know, that's the fascinating part about, you know, human creativity is just these crazy brains we got.
Yeah. And I think that is, like, I guess the final point that I like to make on the show sometimes is, like, different people have a different idea in their mind of, like, what a composer or what a filmmaker or writer mm-hmm. is thinking when they make a choice or when we, you know, are critiquing what they're doing. And often, I mean, I'm sure none of us quite know exactly how they got there unless they have said. And so with something as, you know, a lot of people think the music of Star Wars is kind of a mysterious thing that I find that a lot of people struggle to talk about other than to say it's amazing. Beyond that, it's really hard to talk about. There's just so much emphasis on, like, what was he thinking or why did he do that? Or what was, like, the secret clue or, like, what was, you know, and I just laugh sometimes thinking about how many things was probably just his intuition, his style, his gut, just whatever, just, you know, the things that he always does or some other arbitrary choice, like having to make it for palpable for a micro edit or something.
Right.
So much. Anyway, thanks for sharing your thoughts, Alex. Do you have any other comments about the music or the sound in this scene in these minutes?
There's a weird sort of Yoda does, like, a little teleportation trick in this where he's the ghost Yoda somewhere and then he kind of, like, appears somewhere like 10 feet different, and there's, like, a weird, I didn't notice it, but Pete brought it up, like a kind of like a teleporting kind of sound or something. Did you catch that?
No, that's cool though. He did teleport. Yeah. Okay. That is validating. I have no spatial awareness. So, yeah. So it's hard for me to notice things like that sometimes. That's cool. As a kid, I used to close my eyes and listen to Yoda speak and imagine Miss Piggy and vice versa. And it was like, I was really obsessed with doing this. And I don't know why. Like, I would just tell everyone, like, that Yoda was Miss Piggy and Miss Piggy was Yoda. And to close your eyes, and I swear you can hear it. And yeah, so that that's something that delights me when I hear Yoda.
Do you know The Dark Crystal? Do you know that?
I just saw that several months ago.
Okay. Yeah. Pete was talking about it, and he was saying one time when he was in college, he watched it, and he couldn't unsee the fact that it was people in puppets holding, like, he could only see them as people with crazy costumes on, and not, he couldn't make that mental disconnect of seeing them as, like, living creatures unto themselves. So it's almost like a similar thing. Once you hear Yoda, once you see Miss Piggy as Yoda, is the same. You can't unsee it. So I can understand why people are getting upset by you pointing it out to them.
No one got upset. They were just upset that I talked about Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Well, then they're jerks.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I think that's all I really had to say about, those are the main notes that I had for this clip. I will say, the motifs that were in this scene were Rey's theme a little bit at the beginning, Force theme, and Yoda's theme. And the soundtrack is track number 13, The Sacred Jedi Texts. If you want to hear Alex talk more about these very same minutes, you can listen to Star Wars Minute. I almost said Star Wars Music Minute. You can listen to Star Wars Minute. What episodes are these? 71 through 76? Through 80? 81 through 85? What are we on?
81 through 85, I believe.
Wow. Yeah. Well,
hour and 20 minutes in. Crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to link a playlist at the end that has all five of the Star Wars Minute episodes from this week, and then this after that one, so six episodes in a row. Alex, what else are you working on at the moment?
Well, in addition to my duties as co-host of Star Wars Minute, I am the co-host of Godfather Minute, we go through the Godfather movies 1 minute at a time. We only do 1 minute a week, so it's going to take us a couple of years to get through this. So we're in it for the long haul. We just started Godfather 2, so get in on the ground floor of Godfather 2 at least.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yes. So, So
Alex also co-hosted a Beatles podcast. So if you want to hear talk more about music.
Yes, it was called Alphabetical, where we reviewed every Beatles song from 12 to Y, not A to Z, 12 to Y. And check that out, Alphabetical, wherever fine podcasts are available for download. What's this? We got to come up with a term for that. Anyway.
Podcast, I'm glad that, like, it's so hard. It's like, how do you share a podcast? That's why I just share the YouTube link, because what am I going to do? Put everyone's podcast player link there?
Yeah.
There's too many. Come on. Yeah. There's too many.
But thanks for having me on the show. It was a lot of fun and I learned a lot. Don't forget, look up the Trash Compactor music.
Yes.
And the supercut of the different versions of Luke trying to kill Kylo Ren.
I'm going to have to put the Trash Compactor. If I find it on YouTube, I'll put that in the show notes.
Totally.
And thank you for your podcast, Alex. It has brought me so much joy in my life.
Well, thanks for coming on. You're a great guest. So
thank you.
Happy to have you.
Yay. All right, listeners, if you have some thoughts to share, if we said a lot of things that were wrong, or you just have different opinions, let me know at Star Wars Music. At Star Wars Musemen on Twitter, or Chrysanthi Tan. You can also email me at podcast@starwarsmusicminute.com. And if you have an in-depth question or something, that's probably a better place than Twitter. Just, if you can write your paragraph out and not do like a 10-tweet thing. If you're watching the Bad Batch animated series, I do music commentary on YouTube. And I live stream that on the Star Wars Music Minute YouTube channel with a couple friends. And I do like a guess where this... I play like stuff that happened in the episode and do like a guess where in the podcast, where in the episode this happened. My friends hate it. And if you're feeling extra brave, you can even call in while we are live to share your own thoughts. That's all I have for today. And I will see you next week on, what is this show? Star Wars Music Minute.
Star Wars Music Minute.